Welcome to the Seven Figure CEO Podcast. The goal of each episode is to help you break through the $1 million mark in your business. Now, here is your host, Casey Graham.
Hey, well, welcome to the Seven Figure CEO Podcast. This is Casey Graham, and I am so excited to be here today. This is going to be an awesome podcast. And on this podcast, we only have two rules. And rule number one is this is a no theory zone where we actually talk about practical stuff that works. No high level ideation stuff that's just out there. It's like what actually is working, what's actually going on in business, and what's actually happening. Number two is that every guest we have has got to have passed the seven figure mark at some time. And so I am so excited to be here today with Brian. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Tell everybody just a little bit about, like, who are you? What do you do? I've got a very diverse audience, from carpet cleaning companies to, financial advisors to whoever's running, somebody trying to get past that seven-figure mark and sustain past it. So if people don't know who you are, give them a little update.
Yeah, so I've been at this for about 18 years. I was an attorney, graduated from law school in 94. Had the big law firm job and absolutely hated it. So by 98, I just took the plunge because I was really unhappy. And I just said, you know, I'm either going to make it on my own or I'll end up bartending in Austin or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. But this wasn't working for me. And it was interesting because I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I never took a business class, had never read a marketing book. I was a liberal arts major with a law degree, and I was practicing business law. So I basically came to the conclusion that I wanted to be the guys that hire the lawyers, not the one who's papering the deal. You know what I'm saying? But other than that, I was hopelessly naive. But the one thing that I'd been paying attention to for those 4 years was the internet. And it just seemed to me that you had to be able to, you know, be able to create a business or make a living by reaching all those people. That was combined with a desire to write. Like a lot of frustrated attorneys, they always want to write a novel or something. But I didn't go to New York or LA to become a screenwriter. I said, I'm going to do this online. And so I started off with that. And for a year, you know, I actually did good at creating content and building an audience, but I had no idea how to make money. And
what was the topic? What were you talking about then? Like when you
so at that point, it was really like, you know, building at the time before blogs, they were called e-zines, basically email newsletters, which are still popular today. Go figure. But yeah, it was pop culture stuff, just stuff I was interested in. I really was going for that. Make a living doing what you love, you know, without having a clue of a business model or a revenue model, right? So it wasn't until 99 I read a book called Permission Marketing by Seth Godin. Basically, it's saying, you know, the internet is a direct marketing medium. You need something to sell other than advertising. But otherwise, I was doing everything right. I was building email lists, audience, all that kind of stuff.
How did you know to do that, though? Like, I know now it's been 18 years. Let's drill just a little bit. How did you even know to start building an email list in 1999?
Yeah, I mean, really it was 98, and I observed other people who were creating these e-zines, and you're on the outside, and, you know, back at that time, there weren't books and courses and conferences and like we have now. You just had to watch and try to figure it out. But it appeared that they were selling pretty expensive advertising in these email newsletters, people like Chris Perillo. I don't know if you're familiar with him. So that's where I got the idea from. And then, of course, you try to establish relationships with people and they'll try to help you out to a certain degree and all that. So it was a very, very different environment. It was really try, see what works, et cetera. But once I figured out that I was doing everything right except not having a viable thing to sell, the only thing I had to sell was legal services. And so rather than starve or go bartend in Austin, I started another email newsletter about legal issues related to the internet. And then it was like magic. All of a sudden, this, you know, kid 4 or 5 years out of law school was developing business directly online just by writing about issues, demonstrating that I knew what I was talking about. And now we call that content marketing all these years later. But at the time, I was just like, this is amazing. it got me past my distaste for practicing law, that, you know, just the fact that I was able to generate those clients myself.
And so you were did you do the services yourself for the customers, or
yeah.
did they buy courses, or what was your early offering?
No, I mean, I was a solo attorney, you know,
It's using content marketing to drive business.
Exactly. To attract the clients in the first place, right?
1999.
Right.
and there's still people listening to this podcast today that have no idea that exists.
No, I know. It's very strange. But so after that,
what'd you do?
I think that's when I realized that, more than a traditional writer, I was an entrepreneur who could write. So I'm like, okay, what's the next thing? How can I use content to attract clients and make a lot of money? That's not the practice of law. And so I looked around, and now it's 2001. And I'm looking at the real estate industry, and people have always been attracted to high commissions and, that kind of thing. I actually, rather than going to work for a brokerage, started my own brokerage. Eventually, I added a second one. And the interesting thing here, and again, 2001, they were virtual real estate brokerages. There was nothing but websites, right? And once I learned that essentially what we're doing is a form of direct marketing, I taught myself copywriting, and I was just really had gotten good, especially relative to the competition. So I started this brokerage. It was purely online, and I was really good at marketing, and it took off, and I did that for 4 years. The downside of that period of my life was really good at marketing, really not the greatest manager in the world. And yet I would never let a client down or let something slip through the cracks. So I worked my tail off 18 hours a day. And I was just burnt out by the time we got to 2005.
Were you making any money at this time?
Yeah, I was making more money than if I would have stayed in a partner in that law firm, or if I would have made partner. Yeah. I was making about $500,000 a year at the peak, So, yeah. That was my first success, but I wasn't a success at the operation side of the business because everyone goes through this, right? You hear this. I did everything myself. I wouldn't delegate. I burnt out, et cetera. I think we almost have to go through this process. Hopefully these days there's enough information out there that'll say, don't do that. But I think it's natural. I think it's part of what you have to learn if you're going to actually keep going to the point where you do get to that 7-figure point and now 8-figure point.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so just the big chunk. So what are you doing now? Like it's now a decade or so later. What do you got going on? How big's your company? How many employees you have? What's your current landscape?
Okay, so right now we are about 65 people. We're a completely virtual company. So we say we're based in Boulder, but really there's only a few of us in this area. Which is interesting, but that's just the way we grew. We got the best person for the job, no matter where they were. And since, we're all internet people, it worked out with the collaboration tools and all that. We did $12 million in revenue last year. We're primarily a software and hosting company now, which is amazing to me because I remember back in 2005 thinking it's too bad that I can't do software, but you can. It just depends on what path you have to take. So that's where we are now. Let's go back to how it started. 2006, I started a blog called Copy Blogger to basically show how I started these three service businesses using content without capital, really using, no physical spaces, just really low overhead, bootstrap success in that space. And it was really about what we call, again, content marketing. When I started Copy Blogger, that's what it was about. But we didn't call it that. It was a couple of years before my friend Joe Paluzzi, who is kind of he's the head of the Content Marketing Institute. He convinced me because we didn't like the term. I still don't like the term because I don't think people understand what it means necessarily right off the bat. But it is a very powerful thing. So for 11 years now, we've been teaching people content marketing at Copy Blogger, and then we developed products each year that we felt that our audience needed to solve a problem. So the normal process is you make a product and try to find someone to go sell it to. We had people and we wanted to create what they specifically wanted. And that's really, I think, the key to our success. that plus I am very much like the people in our customers because I am good at content and marketing. I'm not a technical person. So we create software to solve that problem.
That's good. So what's your software? Where's your big revenue streams?
So we have WordPress hosting. We sell WordPress themes at StudioPress. And our big thing that we started really working on in 2010 and then released in 2014 is called the Rainmaker platform.
Okay.
If you're familiar with HubSpot, it's a very similar concept, except nowhere near as expensive. And we're able to pull that off by starting at the core with WordPress. And then it's essentially our own customized website platform, but it also includes marketing automation, email, everything we use to make ourselves an eight-figure business.
Got it.
We sell to the people who follow us.
That's cool. All right. So let's get down to like, what is the decision? If you had to say this is a decision that you made, let's talk about just from starting at Copy Blogger Ford. What's a decision that you made that you go, man, that was a decision that was absolutely paramount early on that has put the trajectory of this business on the right path?
It's hard to say one because each year was almost like a different business. So for the first 18 months after Copy Blogger, I didn't have anything to sell. I was really trying to figure out what do they want. And that ended up being an online course in 2007. And we went from zero to six figures in a week and seven figures within a year. That was a separate business. I want to say it was the next year when the guy who said he couldn't do software, you know, partnered up with another guy and we released the first framework for WordPress. At that time, WordPress products weren't what they are today. They were all free. They had no support, you know, and it was a problem just waiting to be solved because when you look at the WordPress market, people are really paying for the dependability of the source and the support that comes with it, right? So that was my first, you know, step into software. And then I realized with the right, you know, people to work with that I could, if it's right for the audience and I can sell it, and then it comes down to, can we develop it? And we just got more sophisticated year after year after year until now we're at this SaaS that I would have told you, you know, 7 years ago, I was not capable of being in charge of.
I love it. So let's talk about just the iterations. You said, you know, one of the things I always talk about is people. And so you talked about if you're with the right people, you can do anything. How did you start and how did you know who to hire SaaS-wise? Because you can go on Upwork or, you know, go all these high-end agencies. And was this like a buddy? Was this a client? Like, how did it bubble up to say, oh, here's what the audience wants. Now we can do this. So I'm going to hire this person. How did you know it was right?
Well, through the early days, I would say 2007 through 2010, each year I had a person come to me with the ability to build something and, you know, that was right for the audience. Now, that happened 2007, 2008, 2009, and then in 2010, I took all those separate companies and merged them all together to form what we have today because we wanted to build something bigger. So that was a process of using strategic partnerships. The interesting thing is all of those opportunities came to me from the audience. I did not go seek them out. But what I did is say no to 98% of everything that came to me. That's not right. That's no. That may make some money in the short term, but it's going to hurt me in the long term. So I was really good at staying true, having some integrity about long-term success rather than a quick buck. And I think
How do you do that? How do you become good at that?
Well, when you serve someone at a educational, you know, instructional level, which is how, you know, early blogging was about your opinion and this and that, I was trying to teach people things. And when you do that, you get response and feedback that shows where they're getting stuck. And then, you know, a recurring theme was the technology is what's holding me back, right? So that's, you're being informed, not in a vacuum. You're not making, I mean, it's always an educated guess. Key on the educated as opposed to, yes, you know, let's build this thing because it's neato and no one wants to buy it.
Yeah. Okay. So What would you say you spent your time doing pre 1 million? And then what do you spend your time doing now post 1 million?
Well, it's weird because, again, like I said, with those individual companies, every one of them made it to seven figures. The WordPress company in 2008 went to several million in annual revenue.
And what did you do though? What was your role?
I was the combination of CEO and CMO, if you will. But it was, you know, these were very small companies powered by technology. And that's what's fascinating to me, especially what you're seeing going on now. More and more people are opting for these small, high-powered businesses relatively to the amount of capital it takes, the amount of people it takes, leveraging technology, virtual teams, freelancers, all of that, to make literally to become seven figures, and they're just little tiny companies. We were a little more ambitious just because we wanted to do something else, and that's how we got to eight figures, but it's usually always driven by what we want to build that correlates with what the audience needs, right? Okay. And so it's rarely this will make a lot of money. Well, we always want to make a lot of money. I mean, but again, I think by making decisions driven purely by either revenue or profit, you can end up going in the opposite direction. It's rough sometimes, but I think it takes discipline if you want to build a company that's going to last.
That's good. So let's talk a little bit about people. 65 people. Tell me some of your mistakes in just hiring over 18 years. What are some things you'd say, man, I just sucked at this?
Yeah. I feel lucky, again, because I don't think we hire in a normal way. We don't put out job postings. You know, it's only been in the last 8 months that we've said, hey, we're hiring for support or whatever, because all the people, even employees, came from the audience. So, you know, we talk a lot about culture and you know, principles, and you put them up on the wall in the break room or something, and it's sure. It's just that. It's a piece of paper. But when you take this content and audience approach, you're putting out there what you believe every week. And people are either going to identify with you, as a prospective customer, but also as a prospective employee. They're like, hey, I want to work with you guys. And then that's mostly how it's from developers to support people to everyone who's on my marketing and editorial team. They all came to us. Now, the mistake has been there's only been three people that have not worked out. And that's pretty good.
That's the best I've ever heard.
Well, one came to us through, at the time of the merger, an employee at Studio Press side, and it just didn't mesh well. Those core values just weren't there.
Sure.
And that happens, right? It's amazing to me how well everyone else that came through that worked out. The other one was a person that came through essentially an acquisition hiring situation where to get our hosting division rolling, we acquired a small hosting team. All of those people are still with us except for one. Again, it makes sense, right? These are the situations where you've attracted people through a strategic relationship, and yet sometimes that doesn't mean that you're going to align with them on the really important stuff. So I feel incredibly blessed by the way this has worked out. But I always hesitate and say, you know, we are unique in that way. And I've heard of other companies that have, you know, started audience first, product second, employees, you know, come after that. And it's the same story. They've been very lucky. Now, the thing that always worries me, if I had to go from 65 to 165 in 2 months, culture would suffer. I mean, it just does. And I admire, but I also don't envy, you know, startups that have to scale quickly. So we've been slow and steady. You know, we grew from 7 million to 10 million, 10 million to 12 million, not rocket growth, but we're on the right path, and that's what's important to us.
Why do you do this?
You know, some days, you know, because you just, my motto and my catchphrase for like on my podcast, I do a newsletter, is keep going. And I found that I truly experience the most exhilaration and joy when I'm doing the next thing and or making what we have better. And I get up every morning and some days I'm tired and I'm like, oh, but something will happen. I'll be like, yes, let's do that. Let's talk about that. Let's plan this out. Let's do it. It's just, that's how entrepreneurs are, I think. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience, but if you're not jazzed about taking it further, then you might need to do something else. I don't know. Cause you the money's never going to be enough. You know, I mean,
talk about that. Do you really believe that?
Well, if there were enough money, I probably would, for there to be enough money, we would sell this company, right? That's our biggest asset right now. And then I would have to go do something else. I'm not going to go sit on the beach. I'd love to give it a shot for a while, but I'd say 2-3 months tops and I'm back at something. And maybe it's more of a charitable thing or a humanitarian thing, but I know the way my brain works and I'd start another business.
No touch. I just sold my business in February. So,
oh, congrats.
Yeah. It's totally, it's a different, have you sold a business?
No. Oh, I did in 2005, but I sold it to my partners. Didn't work out well.
Gotcha.
There's a whole lesson. We could do a whole podcast on why you don't sell your business to your partners.
That's true. So this is so interesting. If you were going to talk to the entrepreneur about like processes, like early on, you know, you're kind of figuring it out and you just got a few people and some contractors. Now you guys, I'm assuming y'all have all kind of processes. You have systems, you have
absolutely,
you know, all that kind of stuff. What's the balance like between processing the thing and like, cause everybody says I want an automated business. I want something that hums and blah, blah, blah. I interview all these people and I don't ever find any that are really like that.
I mean, not an ambitious business for sure. There are ways to set up, you know, relatively passive income streams, but you're going to do a lot of work to get it there in the first place.
Sure.
And again, if you have that passion, like we were just talking about,
you don't want to.
Yeah, you don't want to. So anyway, but
so are y'all process driven? Like, how does it work?
Okay, so going back to the real estate days, I said great at marketing, bad at essentially processes, right? Processes that brought the clients in were fantastic.
Sure.
Once they were in there, it was like a fire drill. So my first partner in 2007 was Tony Clark. He's our COO.
Okay.
And he and I are like, you know, McCartney and Lennon, if you will. You know, I'm the strategic marketer and he's the operations and processes guy. And since it was the two of us and his wife to today, you can really trace back to his original ideas about how things should proceed within an organization, because we're both big believers in being nimble, agile, whatever buzz phrase you want to use here, especially in the internet world. You have to see what's happening and be able to turn. Not pivot in the sense that you got to start over.
Sure.
But your original idea is a good one, but it's never going to work exactly how you envision, and you have to know that. Today, it's so ingrained in our culture that you don't even have to say it anymore.
Yeah.
But that's the great thing about having processes that allow you to adapt without going into chaos.
So tell me one of those specifically.
Well, for example, our development processes are set up to where we're going to go through a certain validation of the features that we're going to add. For something like Rainmaker as a SaaS, it's trying to be an all-in-one solution. That is challenging because you're competing against people who are single feature SaaS. That's all they work on, right?
Sure.
So we have to be very, very strategic and cognizant about what do the people that we're serving need and want, as opposed to some ideal parity where we're trying to match what everyone else is doing. So that process in development has been ideal because we have a relatively small development team, but they do an incredible amount of meaningful output, if that makes sense.
How many are on it?
Six. So
That's
it's it. not Yeah, it's not a huge development team. I'm often amazed at what they can do. They're actually really, really productive. We get bottled up, or did, in Q&A and testing, because you got to make sure when you're uploading to a platform that everyone is on, right? You can't get it wrong. So we found that our developers are really kind of badasses, but we didn't have enough people to quality assure and test, and we've solved that problem recently. So
that's good. So the processes that you had, you talked about, to know how to adapt and change. Is that more gut, or y'all literally have processes for that, for the market?
Well, it's not gut. Anyone who says there's not an intuitive level is wrong, of course. But it, again, educated decisions. But we're really good, and this is something that I've always been pretty good at, is observing the landscape and extrapolating out. Now you know, in internet world, 5-year plans are worthless. 5-month plans can be worthless. But you have to be willing to do what's indicated, as opposed to, well, this is what we said we're going to do, and by God, we're going to do it. That is a recipe for disaster. And just fortunately, between Tony and I, we've never thought that way. So it's an aspect of being the guy in charge of where the ship is going, and then having a ship crew that can turn the ship, you know. Right. And that sounds kind of a fuzzy answer, but you know, sometimes it's fuzzy.
Totally. Yeah. So question just deeper on this. How do you, because a bunch of people listening to this, their businesses are stuck.
Yeah.
So I talk to a lot of people, and we'll get emails in, and they're just like, we're stuck. I'm at 450 in revenue, or, you know, I'm at 1.2, and we've been 1.2 for 3 years. How do you know when to pivot, like totally pivot, versus like just tweak and change a little bit? How do you know when to ditch, and how do you know when to just, you know, like just make a small tweak and maybe something and add something that you don't have, or a new product offering? How do you decide that? What does that look like? Can you give an example of when you've done that?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when you get stuck, it's because you're no longer connecting adequately with your prospects. You may be relying on messaging that worked at one time, but you failed to really feel how things have changed contextually. So that's where I start. Are we resonating with people with what they've perceived to be their own problems and the solutions they're looking for? Are you trying to give someone a solution that people no longer are gelling with, right?
And how do you do this? Like, how do you, call customers? I mean, is this like a global thing? Is this like internet stats are saying that, not this? What is it?
Yeah. I mean, part of it is the touchy-feely aspect of listening. And social media, I always say, is the greatest market research environment in the world, if you can get past drinking from that fire hose and really tune in. Because I like that better, at least first and foremost, over surveys or polling or anything like that, because it's unscripted, it's out there in the wild, people are talking to each other, expressing their problems and desires, and that can be a gold mine. Some people struggle with that, though. But so let me give you a concrete example of something that happened to us recently with Rainmaker Platform. So we went from zero to $200,000 a month in recurring, you know, revenue fairly quickly, and then we saw a plateau. Meanwhile, we were improving the platform to include robust marketing automation and email to make it truly that all in one thing. And what we discovered is that the initial customers that we attracted were really looking for that easier way to build a powerful website, but they weren't quite at the sophistication level for marketing automation and the email strategies that we were going after. And we discovered that by talking to our customers, and we realized that the go-forward path is a different conversation. It's a different group of prospects and people. And the amazing thing about that, and we're right in the midst of this right now, I wouldn't call it a pivot, but it is definitely taking the platform, at least in one channel, in a place that we had not seriously contemplated before. And that's just all of the above is really the answer. You're paying attention to trends out there. You're seeing what your competitors, even if those are, like I said, they only compete with you on one aspect of what you're selling. And yet you have to factor that in, right? So the competitive landscape matters. Who's doing well when you feel stuck? And then go to your existing customers, and you might discover that the people you need to talk to are different from the people you have. And that's why you're stuck.
Wow. Right?
The same message that got you here isn't going to do it. But if you don't figure it out, you'll just sit there and waste your time.
Huge takeaway. God, that's a big takeaway. I see this happen a lot. I didn't even know that. That is great insight, because you're basically, you got all your low hanging fruit of the 200,000 early. Right. And those are the people that you've been talking to and you could easily convert.
Yep.
This next crowd, or the crowd that you're in now or whatever, is literally a different vertical in market, right?
Yeah. That you just summed up exactly what we think we've discovered. You know, so it's a great question, because this isn't abstract. This is a process we've been going through for the last, I'd say, 6 months of digging into our own situation. Yeah. Instead of sticking our head in the ground and hoping that things turn around, or that attributing it to something else. You got to start with, where are you? What got you here? And often you'll find that something else is what's going to take you forward. So again, that may not be a full out radical pivot, but it's a serious adjustment. And then all of a sudden you take off and you don't just go past 1 million, you go 3 to 4. That can be the catalyst to where you just go crazy. And that's when you're going to have to hire a bunch of people.
Sure. Yeah. And it may not be pivot. It may not be pivot your product. It may be pivot your message.
Yeah. Well, that's where I start always. Because you don't want to reinvent your product, because, like, I always call it rearranging the living room furniture. People are like, well, this isn't working, so let's just change all this, without any validation, without any figuring out, okay, is this going to be something people want? You know?
Yeah.
A lot of times, I always start with, maybe our solution is still correct, but the way we're framing the problem is out of sync with the people who need the solution, right?
Start there,
because that's a whole lot better than scrapping an entire product line or radically reinventing it.
Yep. And what it seems like is what people do that are stuck. And I've been stuck before, and I kept going back to just like, man, it worked. Like, it worked. How does it not work anymore? And it's like, you just keep hammering it, because you got great results for, I mean, years. And then, you know, you got to totally reinvent it. That is.
You got to watch out for complacency too, because when things work and they keep working,
yep,
you get comfortable. You know, it happens to everyone.
It's happened to me
to varying degrees. Some people are more. Anytime things are going too well, I'm like, okay, when's the next shoe going to drop? Right? Exactly. So some people may say, well, that's no way to live. But if you're into what you're doing, being ahead of that curve is part of your job. And it also makes it less painful when things do change, because you're anticipating it to a certain degree.
That's good. I've got three quick questions. You ready?
Sure.
The person listening that says, this is wonderful, Brian, that you can build an audience fast and that you've been doing this since 98. I don't know how to build an audience. I'm still living on handshake deals and referrals and just trying to get good old boy system, which is tons of people that listen to this. Even though we talk about this all the time, they go, that's great. How do I get started building an audience? What would you talk about for a business owner that wants to build an audience for their business?
First thing I'd say is, you know, compared to 1998, there is a lot of guidance out there. There's almost too much, because you have to be able to trust who you're listening to.
Yeah, so cut through the crap for us.
But these days, it's, believe it or not, I think it's easier than ever if you have the discipline to figure out a strategic way to approach it. But something as simple as using Facebook ads, it's amazing that you can drill down and target exactly who you need to talk to, which presupposes that you know who you need to talk to, right? But if you've got an existing business, I see a lot of benefit compared to the startup entrepreneur. You may have to learn some new tricks, but you've got a lot of information about who you do business with.
Yes.
And you can go talk to them, right?
Yes.
A lot of times when you're starting out with something brand new, it's very abstract. It's almost like you're creating a fiction. You're doing buyer personas or whatever, but you're really just doing your best guess based on research. So the existing business owner knows who their client base is, and you can talk to them, and you'll come away with a head start that way. So then you go out and find more people like that with these amazing social targeting and advertising options that we have now. You don't try to sell them anything first, because you're trying to build the right audience, not make the immediate sale. And besides, data shows your conversion rate will go way up if you get them on an email list and then sell to them later. You get more shots at the apple, not just one. It's understanding that email marketing is still the highest converting channel there is. Email's not dead. It's not going away anytime soon. So if you really boil it down to simplicity, know who you need to reach.
Yes.
What information they need in order to do business with you. And then here's the art of it, the copywriting standpoint, whatever the case may be. How do you need to convey that information to them? Who, what, how? And you connect with them. So, for example, some people try to appeal to everyone because they don't want to offend anyone, or they kind of want to water down the message and cast a wide net. That's a recipe for failure in the modern marketing world, right? You have to resonate strongly with one group, and everyone else is going to be either ignore you or even hate you. That's hard for people to deal with, right? You're not used to getting, comments from people that are just ugly or dismissive or whatever.
Yeah.
And the thick skin is the key right here. You don't have to go any further than the presidential election to see how polarizing things are. So find your people, speak to them. Like I said, who, what, and how.
All right. Two last questions. All right. Let's talk about this new audience for Rainmaker. Who should be listening? Who should be tuning into Rainmaker? And like, what does that actually do for people?
Yeah, so going back to the original course that we taught back in 2007, I had a background with creating online courses going back to 2001 because I used them to market the real estate business. So I was kind of into instructional design and learning psychology and all that stuff. So we taught that to people. And it was so gratifying because we were really talking to writers and content creators, people that, can make stuff like this no problem. And they got it. They were like, I got it, but I can't do this technology thing. So the germ of the idea for the Rainmaker platform started in 2007, because if we would have had it then, it would have been amazing, but nothing was ready for that to happen. Not us, not even the marketplace, right? But today it's essentially allows creative teams to get the technology out of the way, to build a sophisticated, for example, membership site with an online course learning management system inside. So that there's two groups of people I think that we're really talking to right now. And one we've been emphasizing in the last year, which is more the digital entrepreneurs, the people who create companies like ours. When you really look at what we are we a content marketing company or a WordPress company? No, we're a digital commerce company. Everything we sell is in digital form. You buy it online. We don't have a sales team at all. It's all content, copy, checkout, right?
Yeah.
And we support you online, all of that. We're a pure digital business. So it made a lot of sense that we would focus on those type of businesses. And we did, through that digging into our user base, we found that the majority of our user base are those digital commerce people. The other type of people that we've been attracting, and I think we can serve better, are professional service providers. And that could be everyone from my background in law and real estate to designers, coaches, consultants, all of that kind of thing.
And where do they need to go? Like, how do they engage with you guys when it comes to Rainmaker? A lot of people listening to this were going to go and
yeah,
check it out. Where do they go?
Well, if I were doing it wrong, I'd say go to rainmakerplatform.com and buy. But some people may be in that space where they are, they've got the other stuff figured out, but they're wondering about the technology side of thing. So I send people to where it all started, copyblogger.com, specifically mycopyblogger.com, my.copyblogger.com, or just go anywhere and you'll find a link to it. But that's a free library of the best stuff that we've done over the last decade. We've put it all into ebook format. It's all updated and great presentation and all that. But it's a free education in everything from email marketing, landing pages, content, SEO, you name it. And we do that because if you, again, here's the idea. If we educate you to the point that you're ready to go and the only thing standing in your way is either hosting or something a little more sophisticated like Rainmaker, then here we are. Let's do business together.
That's good. That's awesome. So last question is, what are you afraid of?
Oof. Letting people down. And that includes my partners, my employees, but I think most of all, and first and foremost, our customers, because without them, I do let down my partners and employees because we don't have a viable company anymore. So, you know, again, it goes back to something we said before. Some days you wake up and, you know, if you're a really good entrepreneur or marketer, you're always thinking about other people. And sometimes you just feel like, well, who's thinking about me? And yet you realize that everything you have has flown through giving to them and you get back. I mean, come on. It's great when you have a successful company. But I guess that's a roundabout way of saying that I don't ever want to see myself get complacent or arrogant, because that's how I've seen people go down before. When you forget about the people who are actually paying the bills and serving them, then you're on your way to being out of business.
That's good. That's so good. So go to copyblogger.com. Is that that'd be the best place?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or my copy blogger. You type in copy blogger somewhere on the internet and you'll find it, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So thank you so much for being here, Brian. I appreciate your time today. And for those of you listening, I'd like for you to email me, casey@caseygraham.com. And we read every email that comes in from the podcast. And let me know what you learned from Brian. And we will pass them on to him and his team. So thank you, Brian, for being here today. And thank you guys for listening to the 7-Figure CEO Podcast.
Thanks a lot for listening to the 7-Figure CEO Podcast with your host, Casey Graham. We'll catch you next time.